Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey guys, back for another episode of Donald Trump's The Art of the Deal, Chapter 3, Growing Up. So in this chapter, Trump is going to tell the story of his upbringing with a lot of details on his father, siblings, and his mother. Mostly his father, whom he quotes a lot to this day. He starts like this. The most important influence on me growing up was my father, Fred Trump. I learned a lot from him. I learned about toughness in a very tough business. I learned about motivating people, and I learned about competence and efficiency. Get in, get it done right, and get out. At the same time, I learned very early on that I didn't want to be in the business my father was in. He did very well building rent-controlled and rent-stabilized housing in Queens and Brooklyn, but it was a very tough way to make a buck. I wanted to try something grander, more glamorous, and more exciting. I also realized that if I ever wanted to be known as more than Fred Trump's son, I was eventually going to have to go out and make my own mark. I'm fortunate that my father was content to stay with what he knew and did so well. That left me free to make my mark in Manhattan. Even so, I never forgot the lessons I learned at my father's side. So I was going to explain a bit later the reasons why being in business with his dad, like the drawbacks of that and what made him venture on his own. First, he's going to explain the story of his father. He says, his story is classic Horatio Alger. Fred Trump was born in New Jersey in 1905. His father, who came here from Sweden as a child, owned a moderately successful restaurant, but he was also a hard liver and a hard drinker. And he died when my father was 11 years old. My father's mother, Elizabeth, went to work as a seamstress to support her three children. The oldest, also named Elizabeth, was 16 at the time, and the youngest, John, was 9. My father was the middle child, but the first son, and he became the man of the house. Almost immediately, he began taking odd jobs, everything from deliveries for a local fruit store to shining shoes to hauling lumber on a construction site. Construction always interested him, and during high school, he began taking night classes in carpentry, plan reading and estimating, figuring that if he learned a trade, he'd always be able to make a living. By the age of 16, he'd built his first structure, a two-car frame garage for a neighbor. Middle-class people were just beginning to buy cars. Few homes had attached garages, and my father was soon able to establish a very good new business, building prefabricated garages for $50 apiece. Here, the lesson is that by having a trade, he was able to secure a living. Like, he had this intuition in high school that going for a trade early was a smart move. And we see today in 2025 that there's a bit of a shift back to trade school. We understand most economies are realizing that people who attend trade schools are lacking, and therefore there's a great demand for people who have technical skills and technical, not just in the technological sense or in the IT sense, but in the real world sense. Like J.D. Vance likes to say, innovation in atoms, not just in bits. But I digress. He graduated from high school in 1922, and with a family to support, he couldn't even consider college. Instead, he went to work as a carpenter's helper for a home builder in Queens. He was better with his hands than most, but he also had some other advantages. For starters, he was just a very smart guy. Even to this day, he can add 5 columns of numbers in his head and keep them all straight. Between his night courses and his basic common sense, he was able to show the other carpenters, most of whom had no education at all, shortcuts, such as how to frame a rafter with a steel square. In addition, my father was always very focused and very ambitious. Most of his co-workers were happy just to have a job. My father not only wanted to work, he also wanted to do well and to get ahead. Finally, my father just plain loved working, and from as early as I can remember, my father would say to me, "The most important thing in life is to love what you're doing, because that's the only way you'll ever be really good at it." And perhaps this is from where Trump gets the, he's going to understand that he doesn't enjoy working in the, his dad's structure, like under his shadow, and for other reasons we'll get into a bit later. But this is really ingrained in him. He needs to do what he loves to do, like, or he needs to love what he does. And that's a virtuous cycle for competence. 1 year after he got out of high school, my father built his first home, a one-family house in Woodhaven, Queens. It cost a little less than $5,000 to build, and he sold it for $7,500. He called his company Elizabeth Trump & Son, because at the time he wasn't of age, and his mother had to sign all his legal documents and checks. As soon as he sold his first house, he used the profit to build another, and then another, and another. In working-class Queens communities like Woodhaven, Hollis, and Queens Village. So we see he's extremely entrepreneurial, very young, even before being of age. He says, instinctively, my father began to think bigger. By 1929, aiming at a more affluent market, he started building much larger homes. Instead of tiny brick houses, he put up 3-story colonials, Tudors, and the Victorians in a section of Queens that ultimately became known as Jamaica Estates, and where eventually he built a home for our family. When the Depression hit and the housing market fell off, my father turned his attention to other businesses. Right, so he had a knack for making money in general. And what he did during the Depression, he bought a bankrupt mortgage servicing company, and he sold a year later for a profit. And then he built a self-service supermarket where he had a butcher, tailor, shoemaker, and many services in one area. And it was successful. But within a year, however, a year to return to building, my father sold out to King Cullen for a large profit. So his venture outside of built the construction space was short-lived, even though it was successful. By 1934, the Depression was finally beginning to ease, but money was still tight. And so my father decided to go back to building lower priced homes. And this time he chose the depressed Flatbush area of Brooklyn, where land was cheap and he sensed there was a lot of room for growth. Once again, his instincts were right. In 3 weeks, he sold 78 homes, and during the next dozen years, he built 2,500 more throughout Queens and Brooklyn. He was becoming very successful. Okay, now Trump is going to tell a story of how, of the marriage between his father and his mother. In 1936, my father married my wonderful mother, Mary McLeod, and they began a family. My father's success also made it possible for him to give his younger brother something he'd missed himself, a college education. With my father's help, my uncle John Trump went to college, got his PhD from MIT, and eventually became a full professor of physics, one of the country's greatest scientists. Perhaps because my father never got a college degree himself, he continued to view people who had one with a respect that bordered on awe. In most cases, they didn't deserve it. My father could run circles around most academics, and he would have done very well in college if he'd been able to go. Right, there's going to be more on the topic of college a bit later in Trump's own experience. We had a very traditional family. Now he explains the dynamics inside. My family, my father was the power and the breadwinner, and my mother was the perfect housewife. That didn't mean she sat around playing bridge and talking on the phone. There were 5 children in all. And besides taking care of us, she cooked and cleaned and darned socks and did charity work at the local hospital. We lived in a large house, but we never thought of ourselves as rich kids. We were brought up to know the value of a dollar and to appreciate the importance of hard work. Our family was always very close, and to this day, they are my closest friends. My parents had no pretensions. My father still works out of a small, modest back office on Avenue Z in the Sheepshead Bay section of Brooklyn, in a building he put up in 1948. It simply never occurred to him to move. Natram's going to tell us a bit more about his siblings. My sister Marianne was the firstborn, and when she graduated from Mount Holyoke College, she followed my mother's path at first, marrying and staying at home while her son grew up. But she also inherited a lot of my father's drive and ambition. And when her son David became a teenager, she went back to school to study law. She graduated with honors, began with a private firm, worked for 5 years as a federal prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office, and 4 years ago became a federal judge. Marianne is really something. Right? So one of Trump's oldest sister became a federal judge in the early 1980s. And Trump has been extremely acquainted with the court system and the law and how it's tried for a very, very long time. So he comes from a family of diverse backgrounds, and one of which is an attorney who became a judge, right? So this is his eldest sister. My younger sister, Elizabeth, is kind and bright, but less ambitious, and she works at Chase Manhattan Bank in Manhattan. Now he's going to tell a story about his older brother, Freddie. And this is a bit of a sad story, and it's going to echo, Trump's going to mention this a lot in his different speeches. This is going to echo a deep pain that Trump has in relating to alcohol or alcohol abuse. My older brother, Freddie, the first son, had perhaps the hardest time in our family. My father is a wonderful man, but he is also very much a business guy and strong and tough as hell. My brother was just the opposite, handsome as could be. He loved parties and had a great, warm personality and a real zest for life. He didn't have an enemy in the world. Naturally, my father very much wanted his oldest son in the business, but unfortunately, business just wasn't for Freddie. He went to work with my father reluctantly, and he never had a feel for real estate. He wasn't the kind of guy who could stand up to a killer contractor or negotiate with a rough supplier. Because my father was so strong, there were inevitably confrontations between the two of them. In most cases, Freddie came out on the short hand. Eventually, it became clear to all of us that it wasn't working, and Freddie went off to pursue what he loved most, flying airplanes. He moved to Florida, became a professional pilot, and flew for TWA. He also loved fishing and boating. Freddie was probably happiest during that period in his life. And yet I can remember saying to him, even though I was 8 years younger, "Come on, Freddie, what are you doing? You're wasting your time." I regret now that I ever said that. Perhaps I was just too young to realize that it was irrelevant what my father or I thought about what Freddie was doing. What mattered was that he enjoyed it. Along the way, I think Freddie became discouraged and he started to drink, and that led to a downward spiral. At the age of 43, he died. It's very sad because he was a wonderful guy who never quite found himself. In many ways, he had it all, but the pressures of our particular family were not for him. I only wish I had realized this sooner. This is going to mark Trump. Well, he was sober all his life, but this was a particular point at which he understood the negative consequences of alcohol or dependency to any addiction. Right? He regrets not having been softer with his brother or more understanding of a different life choice. Right? The fact that it wasn't for him to be in a family business should have been just fine. And they should have encouraged him to pursue what he liked best. But Trump does reflect on that with a tinge of regret. he goes on in the story and now brings the story back to him. Fortunately for me, I was drawn to business very early. And I was never intimidated by my father, the way most people were. I stood up to him and he respected that. We had a relationship that was almost businesslike. I sometimes wonder if we'd have gotten along so well if I hadn't been as business-oriented as I was, as I am. Even in elementary school, I was very assertive, aggressive kid. In the second grade, I actually gave a teacher a black eye. I punched my music teacher because I didn't think he knew anything about music, and I almost got expelled. I'm not proud of that, but it's clear evidence that even early on, I had a tendency to stand up and make my opinions known in a very forceful way. The difference now is that I like to use my brain instead of my fists. I was always something of a leader in my neighborhood, much of the way it is today. People either liked me a lot or they didn't like me at all. In my own crowd, I was...
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Is very well liked, and I tended to be the kid that others followed. Then he goes on to say, tell a story about his with his brother Robert, and they played blocks together, and how he basically built a building out of it and glued it together and didn't return the blocks. Essentially, he had a way to kind of... He had a stronger will in most situations, and that kind of aggression, that untamed aggression, if you will, probably irked his parents a little bit, and they decided to send him to military school. When I turned 13, my father decided to send me to a military school, assuming that a little military training might be good for me. I wasn't thrilled about the idea, but it turned out he was right. Beginning in the 8th grade, I went to the New York Military Academy in upstate New York. I stayed through my senior year, and along the way, I learned a lot about discipline and about channeling my aggression into achievement. In my senior year, I was appointed a captain of the cadets. And perhaps, and we know this by now, that this inspired Trump's deep reverence for all things military. And so Trump has a profound respect for the hierarchy and the discipline and the bravery of servicemen and servicewomen and for the military institutions of the United States. And we know where that comes from. Now he's going to give, he's going to talk about a teacher in particular who had an effect on him. In that setting, there was one teacher in particular who had a big impact on me. Theodore Dobias was a former drill sergeant in the Marines, and physically he was very tough and very rough, the kind of guy who could slam into a goalpost with wearing a football helmet and break the post rather than his head. He didn't take any back talk from anyone, least of all from kids who came from privileged backgrounds. If you stepped out of line, Dobias smacked you, and he smacked you hard. Very quickly, I realized that I wasn't going to make it with this guy by trying to take him on physically. A few less fortunate kids chose that route, and they ended up getting stomped. Most of my classmates took the opposite approach and became nebbishes. They never challenged Dobias about anything. Now Trump says, I took a third route, which was to use my head to get around the guy. I figured out what it would take to get Dobias on my side. In a way, I finessed him. It helped that I was a good athlete, since he was the baseball coach and I was the captain of the team. But I also learned how to play him. What I did basically was to convey that I respected his authority, but that he didn't intimidate me. And we're going to notice this is how Trump also behaves around other world leaders. Right? right, around other institutions. He can respect the authority, but he doesn't get intimidated. Even though, regardless of the stature of the country or the leader that is on the other side of the table. It was a delicate balance. Like so many strong guys, Tobias had a tendency to go for the jugular if he smelled weakness. On the other hand, if he sensed strength, but you didn't try to undermine him, he treated you like a man. From the time I figured that out, and it was more an instinct than a conscious thought, we got along great. So this is worth repeating because this is essentially Trump's philosophy until today. It was a delicate balance. Like so many strong guys, he had a tendency to go for the jugular if he smelled weakness. On the other hand, if he sensed strength, but you didn't try to undermine him, he treated you like a man. So strength, but without trying to undermine. He treated you like a man. From the time I figured that out, and it was more an instinct than a conscious thought, we got along great. All right, so now we're going to go more into the academics of it. I was a good enough student at the academy, although I can't say I ever worked very hard. I was lucky that it came relatively easy to me, because I was never all that interested in schoolwork. I understood early on that the whole academic thing was only a preliminary to the main event, which was going to be whatever I did after I graduated from college. So Trump is lucid enough to understand the relative unimportance of the schoolwork itself in the grander scheme of things of his achievements in his career and in his life. So that it was just a stepping stone, but that the real game was going to be played after college, not during. That it was part of the journey, but definitely not the destination. All right, so this is going to come back, but there's a few lessons that he's going to drop from his father's business before we go to his college years. You made it in my father's business, rent control and rent stabilized buildings, by being very tough and very relentless. To turn a profit, you had to keep your costs down, and my father was always very price conscious. He negotiated just as hard with a supplier, mops and floor wax, as he would with the general contractor for the larger items on a project. One advantage my father had was that he knew what everything costs. No one could put anything over on him. If you know, for example, that a plumbing job is going to cost a contractor $400,000, then you know how far you can push the guy. You're not going to try to negotiate him down to $300,000 because that's just going to put him out of business. But you're also not going to let him talk you into $600,000. The other way my father got contractors to work for a good price was by selling them on his reliability. He'd offer a low price for a job, but then he'd say, look, with me, you get paid, and you get paid on time. And with someone else, who knows if you ever see your money. He'd also point out that with him, they get in and out quickly and onto the next job. And finally, because he was always building, he could hold out on the promise of plenty of future work. His arguments were usually compelling. So a quick recap here is that the way his father got better prices was not only he knew what things cost, right? So he was able to get closer to the actual truth in a negotiation. He knew basically he couldn't be played because he knew what were the inputs and the outputs, right? He understands the person has to make a profit, but he wasn't easily duped at all. On the other side, he was also telling his contractors that they were going to get paid and on time, and that the job would be managed quickly, and that there would be more future work. So it's kind of a trifecta of a win-win relationship, right? It's really a positive sum, right? So he knows that the concerns that contractors have is that maybe the developer doesn't pay them, maybe the developer goes bankrupt, or that it's a one-off, or that the project takes forever, and then it eats at their livelihood. The longer they're in one project and not doing other projects, right? If they're paid a lump sum for it, we can see quickly how that is not in their favor. So he emphasizes the kind of the pain points that he knows they have in getting paid and in finding work by saying that they get paid with him. They'll get paid on time. The job will get done quickly. And there's a promise for plenty of future work. And it's true. Fred Trump had a reputation for building many houses, right? Trump put him as building over 2,500 individual homes. And then also there were low-cost apartment buildings over in New York City's outer boroughs. So this is kind of the negotiation lessons from his father that are intertwined. And what can we take from it? Is to know the costs of the inputs. And to know the pain points of the people that you're dealing with. That's on the knowledge front. And then you apply that by using elements of language that appeal to these pain points. And you keep in mind what are the input-output costs on the negotiation. Now we're going to go back to Trump's academics. After I graduated from New York Military Academy in 1964, I flirted briefly with the idea of attending film school at the University of Southern California, USC. I was attracted to the glamour of the movies, and I admired guys like Sam Goldwyn, Daryl Zanuck, and most of all, Louis B. Mayer. It's Mayer Goldwyn, if you guys see the reference, you know, before the movies with the Lion, right? That's the Mayer Goldwyn franchise, whom I considered great showmen. But in the end, I decided real estate was a much better business. And look, so we see half of Trump is attracted to the showbiz. We see it here. And he's going to give credit to his mom for that. And the other side is attracted to business. And of course, he gives credit to his dad for that. I began by attending Fordham University in the Bronx, mostly because I wanted to be close to home. I got along very well with the Jesuits who ran the school, but after 2 years, I decided that as long as I had to be in college, I might as well test myself against the best. I applied to the Wharton School of Finance at the University of Pennsylvania, and I got in. At the time, if you were going to make a career in business, Wharton was the place to go. Harvard Business School may produce a lot of CEOs, guys who manage public companies, but the real entrepreneurs all seem to go to Wharton. Saul Steinberg, Leonard Lauder, Ron Perelman, the list goes on and on. Right. Here, it's useful to take note of the people that Trump admires, right? So in the entertainment, we said Sam Goldwyn, Daryl Zanuck, Louis B. Mayer, and on the business side, Saul Steinberg, Leonard Lauder, Ron Perelman. Perhaps the most important thing I learned at Wharton, and that's pretty funny, was not to be overly impressed by academic credentials. It didn't take me long to realize that there was nothing particularly awesome or exceptional about my classmates and that I could compete with them just fine. The other important thing I got from Wharton was a Wharton degree. In my opinion, that degree doesn't prove very much, but a lot of people I do business with take it very seriously and it's considered very prestigious. So all things considered, I'm glad I went to Wharton. Right, so Trump is showing again his unconventional thinking, or basically how much he relies on his own assessment for appreciating things or making decisions, right? He understands that the value of a Wharton degree, yes, among the degrees available, it is the best business school for entrepreneurship, for people who are driven, right? He says that unlike the Harvard Business School is mostly to train like professional managers who are going to be professional CEOs, but he says the people that have like the raw entrepreneurial spark usually go to Wharton, and usually that's probably because Wharton offers a bachelor's degree, whereas Harvard Business School doesn't. So, and usually the entrepreneurial drive is in you younger. It's either there or not, but it's a better moment in life to get things started. And so Trump gives credence to Wharton, but he also doesn't overblow it. He feels that his classmates aren't all that special and that the degree itself for him isn't all that special. So he says, I was very glad to get finished. I immediately moved back home and went to work full-time with my father. I continued to learn a lot, but it was during this period that I began to think about alternatives. For starters, my father's scene was a little rough for my taste, and by that I mean physically rough. I remember, for example, going around with the men we called rent collectors. To do this job, you had to be physically imposing, because when it came to collecting rent from people who didn't want to pay, size mattered a lot more than brains. The second thing I didn't find appealing was that the profit margin was so low. You had no choice but to pinch pennies. There was no room for any luxuries. Design was beside the point because every building had to be pretty much the same. Four walls, common brick facades, and straight up. You used red brick not necessarily because you liked it, but because it was a penny a brick cheaper than tan brick. So Trump was, as we said earlier, Trump's sole purpose to go to college to kind of get that done, and he was very eager to start his career in real estate. So he went back to work for his father, but quickly, once he came back, he was confronted to two major drawbacks. The first was that the scene where his father operated was the lower income housing, rent control area, and you know, being confronted to people who aren't necessarily paying the rent, or to sanitary conditions that he didn't really like. Right. So with his dad or his dad's helpers, he came to collect, and that was a bit of a rough environment, as we can imagine. It's not exactly what a Wharton boy would would aspire or imagine to be doing after graduation. The second thing is, he didn't like that everything was cookie cutter, right? Because it was very standardized for government's projects for lower housing. All of the apartments looked the same. There was no room to add creativity. Also, it was on shoestring budgets. The costs had to be controlled A to Z. And Trump, right? So like the luxury, as we know. So he wanted out, and eventually he did. He says, the real reason I wanted out of my father's business, more important than the fact that it was physically rough and financially tough, was that I had loftier dreams and visions, and there was no way to implement them building housing in the other outer boroughs. Looking back, I realize now that I got some of my sense of showmanship from my mother. She always had a flair for the dramatic and the grand. She was a very traditional housewife, but she also had a sense of the world beyond her. I still remember my mother, who is Scottish by birth, sitting in front of the television set to watch Queen Elizabeth's coronation and not budging for an entire day. She was just enthralled by the pomp and circumstance, the whole idea of royalty and glamour. I also remember my father that day pacing around impatiently. "For Christ's sake, Mary," he'd say. "Enough is enough. Turn it off. They're all a bunch of con artists." My mother didn't even look up. They were total opposites in that sense. My mother loves splendor and magnificence, while my father, who is very down to earth, gets excited only by competence and efficiency. This one is worth repeating, and it's a great takeaway for what combines in Trump's character. My mother loves splendor and magnificence, while my father, who is very down to earth, gets excited only by competence and efficiency. And a great note here is that Trump eventually gets to meet Queen Elizabeth as the president of the United States, and must have been extremely proud to have lived that moment. So seeing his mom admire that on TV probably inspired him to also want those things, right? To appreciate the luxuries of the ceremonies and the glamour. And so this is where Trump gets his love for splendor and magnificence, and also grounded by his dad's appeal for competence and efficiency. So I think those four characteristics summarize what was instilled in Trump by both of his parents.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.